very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, everybody. Tim Kawakami for 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host, Matthew Barros. I am once again with a malfunctioning microphone. I will get that fixed at a future date. I've given up on this one, trying to get it work. We will have a new one. I am recording this via laptop. If this doesn't sound very good, I'm going to sound just as crappy as Barros normally sounds. So I've accepted that. Barros, we have, in the wake of the 49ers, week one, very, very strong victory over the New York Jets, going 1-0. Some controversy. Some. I heard about it from my friend who has Christian McCaffrey as her best player. So I get it. In the fantasy world, in the betting world that the NFL has embraced, they do have to react to this. I think the 49ers maybe weren't really thinking about that. Kyle Shanahan spoke earlier today. Can you just kind of unravel a little bit about when the decision was made with McCaffrey, why it was made, and was there any kind of skullduggery? Were they trying to trick anybody into thinking that he was going to play and then just kind of do a snookery and switch Jordan Mason? How did this all play out as far as you can tell?
I mean, I don't think that there was any trickery going on because we're out there, you know, this is regular season mode, so we don't see the full practice. But we do see sort of the warm-up period and the what they call the individual period, where the running backs are kind of warming up among themselves. And each of the 3 days, and we're talking Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and I think that alone is a little confusing because on a Monday night game, Kyle Shanahan refers to those 3 days as Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Because that's so what they would normally be. Yeah.
Already we're kind of through the
loop. So do I, by the way, Matt Barrow. So do I.
So my point is that, you know, we're out there, and each of those 3 days, we are scrutinizing Christian McCaffrey because he's on the injury report. But on each of those 3 days, he's taking snaps like he's the starter. You know, he's the first guy through the rotation. He's first. Jordan Mason's second among the tailbacks. So there was no thought among us that, oh, this is something fishy going on because McCaffrey's limping around or McCaffrey's absent. It seemed like he was going to play. Now, the question in my mind was, what kind of, you know, would it be a full slate of snaps? I mean, how often would he come off the field given this calf injury? So it was still a surprise to me that he was ruled out. And the 49ers are saying that the nature of this injury, which Kyle Shanahan sort of specified today was Achilles tendonitis, is that it fluctuates in severity. And some days it felt okay, and some days it definitely did not. And so the questionable status was sort of related to that. They may have had a sense that McCaffrey either wasn't going to play or was going to be held back quite a bit, but he had also had some good days of practice, and they needed to kind of keep the option of him playing a lot if he felt good on the table. Whereas if you ruled him out or you ruled him doubtful, I mean, imagine if they had ruled him doubtful, and then on Sunday he's like, you know, my calf feels great. I want to be out there, and he plays. Then there would have been real legitimate complaints about trickeration, you know, not from fantasy owners, but from the New York Jets.
Well, then you have Jordan Mason telling Lisa Salters after the game on the field that she asked him when did you know you're going to start, and he said, well, they told me Friday. Now, we might get back into is Friday a Saturday or Saturday a Friday? You know, the 49ers were operating, not just Shanahan, they were operating on their usual Sunday schedule. So in their mind, if he says Friday, it's probably Saturday, whatever.
Right.
Just be aware of this. Everyone be aware of this, that there could be some confusion in days. And Shanahan was not happy to have heard. I can tell you this. He is not happy that Mason said that, because it does expose the 49ers to our questions. To these questions, in a world where there's tons of money in fantasy football, tons of money, again, which the NFL takes its share of, there's tons of money in gambling, which the NFL is drinking in the cash from these advertisements from gambling, that there's consequences. Totally understood. And when Mason says, oh, I was told Friday I'm going to start, and the 49ers have been saying other days that it was still up in the air, in fact, seemed to be pointing to McCaffrey starting. There's something, you know, you can point to that and say, what's going on here? My, you know, trying to be a compromised version of this is that somebody, and as Shannon said, maybe Bobby Turner was trying to get him going. Like, you might start. So in the coach's mind, like, I'm going to tell him he's going to start just so make sure he's ready. Might be 25% chance, might be 60% chance, but we can't really legislate for that in getting a player ready. We just have to say, if there's 2% chance that you're going to start, we need you 100% ready. It could have been something like that. It could have been communicated like, okay, you know, we don't know, so you're going to start. Just think that way. That's my compromise. Maybe it gives the 49ers too much credit, but it's not Shanahan's style to tell a player, you know, one way or the other, right? He didn't know for sure on McCaffrey, I don't think. So it's possible, like, okay, just tell him he's going to start, and so he'll be ready. And if he isn't starting, he's still going to be ready to get 10 carries because he might get 10 carries. He might get 14, even if McCaffrey starts. What do you think about my compromise, Barrows?
No, I agree with that. And I guess you have to give them the benefit of the doubt because they haven't done that in the past. You know, there was an example of Kyler Murray had a high ankle sprain, had missed practice, I forget for how long, and the Cardinals listed him as questionable, and it was pretty clear that it was worse than questionable. I don't think that this rises to the level of that. Now, it's what you just underscored, is that Christian McCaffrey is a high, high, high profile player, especially when it comes to gambling and fantasy football. And that's where this becomes scrutinized more than anything else. But going back to my original point, we saw him practicing. We saw him practicing as the starter. So that sort of, you know, lends credence to the 49ers argument that, you know, we weren't sure whether he was going to play or not. And if he did play, he probably would have started. So that's how I come down on it. We're about to go through the very same thing this week. They're back at it tomorrow. People are going to be watching Christian McCaffrey and seeing how he feels. And then Christian McCaffrey is going to talk very, very guarded and clipped when he spoke on Thursday, the real Thursday, I think. Or was it Friday?
No, it was Friday. It was Friday.
I don't know how many good answers we're going to get out of him.
Yeah, I'll just say maybe one layer of this was if there's a coaching staff, there's a coach that Kyle Shanahan is going to try to veil things against, it's Robert Saleh. His buddy, but his former defensive coordinator, that's the guy who's scheming against him. I just think there might have been an extra layer there. I think part of this power running game was let's stuff it down Robert Saleh's throat just because they're buddy. Like, Saleh's trying to do the same thing to Shanahan. They're friends. This is what NFL friends try to do to each other. I've seen it before. And then you hug afterwards, but you don't tip your hand. Maybe. Again, I'm just saying that could be percentage of it. The other percentage, I feel bad for Jordan Mason. Like, you know, that was a really awkward press conference after everyone had heard him tell Lisa Salter that he'd been told on Friday. So you just kind of want to, you know, people, I wasn't in it. I was in the locker room at the time, but I heard about it. And here's a guy who's not, you know, hasn't been around the media very much. He has his game of his life on Monday Night Football. And then is asked a question. He kind of tells the truth in his mind. And it's a big deal and could get the 49ers in some trouble. I don't know that it will. It could. And I'll tell you what, Kyle Shanahan was hot. I know he was hot about hearing that he said that. So it's very likely that he heard about it from Kyle or someone else. You shouldn't have said that. And then he's got to go do a presser, and people are going to ask him about that specifically. I feel bad for him because he should just be enjoying the moment. Great moment. Breakthrough moment for him. You know, I mean, they desperately need Christian McCaffrey to win a Super Bowl, but if he's got to miss 3-4 games, I think Jordan Mason is going to be fine for them. Now, he might get hurt himself. Obviously, the workload is huge for him. You know, carried the ball 28 times. They don't normally do this, even with McCaffrey. But, you know, if the 49ers don't play McCaffrey on Sunday, which I would lean towards them not playing. I mean, Schefter's already reported that they're not going to. Again, I don't think Kyle would love that. But the smart – the smart play is not to expose him to artificial turf on a, you know, just you don't need that. Maybe play him against the Rams the following Sunday, or maybe skip that one too and have him ready. They got a ton of grass games. They got what, 4 or 5 at Levi's after that one. So
yeah, for sure.
You know, maybe you just kind of cushion it that way. We'll see. But I feel bad that Jordan Mason has a, you know, whatever cloud has put on his career best night. There are probably going to be a lot more really good games out of him. But on his first one on Monday Night Football, he kind of let something out that maybe he phrased incorrectly, or maybe he said truthfully. I don't blame him at all, and I feel bad for him.
No, I agree with you. He got kind of caught up in this whole thing, and it should have been just a celebration of him finally getting a start. Fans have been clamoring to see more of him over the last year, and they finally did, and he was exactly what they were expecting. So it was a great game for him. Getting back to your first point about Robert Saleh and that rivalry, you were saying that last night. Yep. When I was saying, wow, Deebo Samuel sure is getting a lot of carries here. This is week one. Deebo Samuel is, you know, not 30, but, you know, the second half of his 20s. Here we are, and they're kind of using him like they did during that backstretch of the 2021 season when he was their everything. And your point was, well, you know, Shanahan wants this W real bad. And, I think, you know, it was part of that. It was partly because no McCaffrey, so you need some dynamic play out of the backfield. They weren't going to play Garendo, and then they weren't going to play Patrick Taylor Jr. Those are the other two tailbacks there. So no McCaffrey, what does that leave you with? If you're going to give Jordan Mason a blow, that's Deebo Samuel. And they were not shy about using him in a very Deebo-like, what I would describe as a very Deebo-like December way. Yes. This is usually the Deebo that comes out when all the chips are on the table. And here we are, early September, and that's happening. So to your point, you thought it was a little kind of brotherly love, brotherly rivalry thing with Robert Saleh.
I've seen it happen before. I've seen it happen before. And I've been told by Shanahan people, you'll know when Kyle really, really wants to win a game. It's when Deebo Samuel was running the ball. Like, it was desperation time in 2021, absolute desperation time, and they just got the ball to Deebo every single time. This game felt a little bit like a really good Garoppolo game, right? Throw it short, don't really push it down the field, although Brock threw some deeper balls, but not really. Brock Purdy, I should say, on first reference, and get the ball to Deebo. Just go, Deebo, go. Go, Deebo, go. And I think Shanahan took a lot of pride in that. Let's just 37 runs, right? That was a stat he was quoting, 37 runs. He just loved anything over 30. He loves anything close to 40. He is absolutely in heaven over, because it means you're controlling the game. Let's talk about a little quarterback, Brock Purdy. You know, a little late to be getting to him, but he kind of had a secondary role, but they love it. I thought Shanahan was really good at talking about him on the conference call today. You know, it's like aggressive but careful, right? Pushing the ball downfield but not exposing it. Careful with the ball while they were building this lead, letting them run the ball, making the right decisions, but also not being timid. That's him, right? We've talked about what Kyle loves about Purdy, and I thought that's about as perfect a description from Kyle, obviously, who would know why he loves him, about why Purdy fits what they do.
Yeah, it was a mature game from him. It was a game where it was clear by the end of the second quarter that he didn't need to have a prolific passing attack to win it. And, you know, Purdy made all the right throws. Nothing, I guess that deep one to Kyle Juszczyk was the only real bomb of the game. Everything else was moderate, and he was efficient in the mid-range. I mean, I think he hit all of his passes over the middle, which is that sweet spot for the 49ers offense. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great understanding of what kind of game it was, and then sort of adjusting to play that game. When you're running the ball like the 49ers did, it makes it so much easier on the quarterback. And you saw that in the play action, and sometimes the play action wasn't there. And Purdy just kind of tucked it and ran it. I mean, even when the play action didn't work as far as uncovering a wide receiver, he still had tons of time to throw it and tons of room to run it. I mean, it was exactly what they were looking for. I thought the game would be similar to Pittsburgh last year when everybody was sort of worried about, you know, the vibe coming out of training camp. And that was the case in 23 as well. And the 49ers just dumped the Steelers in Pittsburgh. That was a game about Purdy and Brandon Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey. They all had big, big games in week one. None of those guys had a big game last night, but the 49ers still won in convincing fashion. I think that has to be reassuring that, okay, you know, we can win not only with a different star, but guys who aren't even stars. I mean, these were the B-listers last night. It was your guy, Jake Moody. It was Jordan Mason. It was my guy, Eric Saubert. It was Juwan Jennings. These are not the marquee players on the team. And it was still a very, very comfortable win.
Yeah, I wrote about the vibes. You know, we've all been writing about dark cloud over this franchise. What's going on with Ayuk? What's going on with Trent? What's going on? You know, obviously, Ricky Pearsall is shot and survives miraculously, thankfully. Just had a lot of things going on this summer. And, you know, the players have been saying, you know, we're just getting our work done. It's not, you know, it's not a distraction. I'm sure the Ayuk thing got to be some sort of distraction. The fact that he's in the locker room, in meetings, and then not practicing and doing the social media stuff. But I do take Trent Williams' words very much to the heart. He speaks the truth and he speaks with authority. He's not a PR guy, but he's going to tell you how things feel. And when he says, like, when I walked in here, you know, he finally ended his holdout, you know, whatever. We're not going to get in days anymore, Barrows, because I am going to be completely baffled. But whatever it was last week. And I walked in here and it was a great mood. It just felt great. And he keeps saying it. He said it the day he came back in, about the depth of this team, about the rookies, about the roster being, you know, he says it's better. Now, we'll see. I think we all know it's top heavy, but it's top heavy and they didn't have their best, offensive weapon, Christian McCaffrey, and they go for 32 and easy could have had 40 against the Jets. A pretty good, I mean, I think they're a very good defense. And although we'll see, but the 49ers did what they wanted offensively. They couldn't get in the end zone those six times, but it's part of being going up against good defenses, controlling the ball. I counted up. I think from the time the start of that first touchdown drive to the end of the game, they had 68 plays to the Jets 21. That is such a clock. I mean, that's overdone Shanahan, right? He just wants to totally control the game. You don't get it, we have it. And we're going to keep it away from you. And then we give it back to you when we kick off. And then you get three plays and you give it back to us. And I just think, listen, we don't know how this is going to go Sunday. This is the next Sunday. You know, we'll have to play it all out. It's 1 week. But when the 49ers leaders are really emphasizing the good vibes, the good atmosphere, the chemistry, I think that lasts. I think that means something. I think we've saw it. It helps that they're so talented. A couple more injuries, maybe it won't feel like that. But, sometimes the narratives, I don't love that word, but I will say it, get overdone because we got to write things, right? We've got to come up. We've got to talk about something. What's different? What's new? What's changed? What's worse? What's better? And it's clearly we had to talk about Ayuk and Williams being out. Clearly had to talk about the Pearsall situation and what the effects of that could be. I think they've come together, and because of all these things that were in jeopardy and they're back together, they feel good about it. Like, this thing wasn't great, but now we're all together. Isn't that, you know, we could have messed it up and we didn't mess it up. Doesn't mean they're a better football team than who they are. They're just who they are. But I do think they feel like a unity in this, maybe, or a common purpose. Well, I don't know if it's last another year or 2 years or even six games, but I just think that's so palpable with this team right now. Do you agree with that, Barrows?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Pearsall episode, I think, really kind of was a burst of elation. I mean, there was the momentary panic, but within an hour, they were reassured. And I think that everyone understood how miraculous that was, and that, you know, that's a good sign. That is part of your team now. I don't want to overemphasize it, but I can definitely see that becoming, you know, something that is discussed, talked about, appreciated on this team. The other part is that, you know, they did have issues. I mean, Ayuk played 60% of the snaps, which is about what we were expecting. Did not have a big role in this game. And I think there was an understanding, okay, we're not going to have him. We're not going to have Christian McCaffrey. So we need to kind of figure out other ways to do it. And that was George Kittle's point, is that without McCaffrey, you sort of kind of go back to basics. And that's how Jordan Mason runs, and that's how they operated that offense last night. And they did it really well, you know, against a team that, you know, probably should know how to defend it. I think it was all extremely positive that you can have that kind of output despite not getting huge output from any of your star players, and that those star players presumably are going to become themselves probably in about a month. I don't know. That's my sort of guess about, you know, when Ayuk is full go, when McCaffrey's back on the field, full go. And, you know, that's a nice luxury to have, to be able to win games while your stars are still kind of getting up to speed.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the defense yet. I thought it was a really kind of energetic, dynamic defense. And, I, you know, one game, and we don't know how the Nick Sorensen era is going to be. We talked about week one. They look really good against the Steelers. Drake Jackson, 3 sacks. There was energy there. But I thought Fred Warner was so freaking good last night, especially in the early going. Just everywhere, forced fumble, big tackles. And if he's energized and he feels connected and he's tying the secondary to the front line, which, you know, he was pretty clear that it really wasn't the case last year. He didn't feel it was D. Wilkes. If that's what Nick Sorensen brings, if he gets the best out of Fred Warner, the 49ers are going to be really good on defense because they have talent elsewhere. But the pass rush, you know, had little struggles early on the touchdown drive by the Jets. Like, you know, they were not getting to Aaron Rodgers. And you give Rodgers time, make him comfortable. He can pick you apart. Especially with Garrett Wilson, but they seem to like kind of lock in on Garrett Wilson. Did you see that chart where Rodgers only threw 3 times to the right, and it really wasn't even the far right; it was just kind of the middle right. They were not going at Tre'Davious Ward, and that is a really good sign for the 49ers, because if they're limited to one side of the field, then they got the other side pretty well covered too with Lenore. And I thought Yadam was good. Like, they got this. This is how great defenses kind of squeeze you. They take away things you want to do. And it just felt like that looked like a solid defense, right? The 49ers looked like a D'Amico Ryans. It just felt more tight. Again, maybe we are overplaying something we just saw, but when 54 is the one leading the way, not that he didn't have a bad year last year, he had a good year last year, but when he's looking like that, it just tells me that he feels confident about everything tied together, that he feels good about Nick Sorensen, and that's an old style. When they were talking about going back to D'Amico Ryans, that's what it felt like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Fred Warner was the tone setter. I think I tallied it up. He had the Jets' first 8 plays. Fred Warner had a tackle on 4 of them, and one of those was a forced fumble. So, I mean, he had the energy, and everybody kind of follows that. If I'm nitpicking a bit, I thought that Devondre Campbell stood out to me. He is not Dre Greenlaw. He's not nearly as fast, not nearly as nimble. Was a little late on a couple of things. I don't know if that's going to come back to bite them at some point. Obviously, the plan is for Dre Greenlaw to come back, maybe at midseason, and for Campbell then to go into the lesser Sam role, the number 3 linebacker role. But that was apparent to me in this game. Other than that, though, I agree with you. They completed some passes against D'Amador Lenore and Isaac Yadam, but it wasn't like they were wide open. Those were tough completions for the most part. Yadam had the pass breakup on 4th down. Lenore had the tip that ended up being an interception. I thought it was a great game from the cornerbacks. And then the only other mistake really was the sort of the oddball offsides that wasn't halted. And everybody kind of thought the play would be dead. And Jair Brown basically stopped running and allowed Alan Lazard to get past him. But other than that, you know, I thought the safeties had a good game too. And, you know, Hufanga and Greenlaw, they're sort of in the same category as Ayuk and McCaffrey. These guys are going to be part of this team at some point. The 49ers are going to be better, or at least more talented at some point this season. And yet they still blew out the Jets in week one.
Yeah, Leonard Floyd, like a new face, gets a sack, thought he was buzzing around. And I'll just say, I love edge rushers that don't give up contain. Not that Rodgers is going to run for you, but it was a squeeze. It wasn't like just loop all the way around and he can like move inside of me. No, it was like very contained. And you've written about this, I've noticed. And he got one of these last night. It's kind of like when the quarterback is flushed by someone else, he's there. Like you don't allow that second time, you know, let them kind of escape to get those second 3 seconds, 4 seconds or race downfield if it's somebody other than Aaron Rodgers. He's very disciplined about that. And like Chase Young, very talented guy, ridiculously undisciplined, just so undisciplined. This is why he's not a superstar, despite his incredible talent. They've had other guys that you just push them up field, and also the quarterback has a lane to go. We've seen Kyler Murray do that to how many times? We've seen Russell Wilson over the years do that. I don't think Leonard Floyd's going to be that. He's going to be that guy who, you know, he might not be getting around the edge every time, but he's not going to let the quarterback get outside of him or get inside of him, open up passing escape lanes. And we know Nick Bosa on the other side of him is going to force stuff. Thought Bosa was really good. I know many fans were saying he was held a lot. He always gets held. But this is what happens. When you're that good, you're going to get around the edge and they're going to have to hold you and it's going to make the official throw the flag, and sometimes he's not. Malik Collins, Jesus. I didn't know he was that good. I did not see that in camp and preseason, but is he just a good player, Barrows?
Yeah. I mean, what you just said about Leonard Floyd kind of cleaning up some sacks, I think that the two interior guys are sort of the same way. I mean, if Bosa and Floyd are forcing the quarterbacks to kind of step up into the pocket, these two guys are quick enough to kind of get some sacks that way. I mean, I think that Floyd's real gift is, he's relentless and he's also tall. He's able to kind of see what's going on. He's not sort of blindly, you know, as you said, kind of moving past the pocket, getting caught in the wash. He's observing the whole time, got these long arms, and he's able to sort of pounce when the opportunity strikes. I mean, he's never out of the play, I guess is my point. And I think that's allowed him to be really Mr. Consistent over the last 5 seasons. It's either 9.5 or 10 sacks a year, and he's on his way to doing exactly that this time. That was their only sack, however. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of opportunities, I guess. I mean, as you pointed out, the Jets just did not have a lot of snaps on offense. It'll be interesting to see if that continues against the Vikings and against the Rams, who are, you know, pretty beat up and probably will be for the 49ers game in week three, including Puka Nacua, who's going to be out for that game, and a couple of guys on that offensive line. So that might be an opportunity to pad some sack numbers this year.
Yeah, I really, if I'm the 49ers, and they've kind of done this before, I might be very conservative about who I play against the Vikings. Probably wouldn't cost you the game. You know, maybe it will. It would not be seen as a positive thing if they lose that game. But I think you can almost afford to lose it if you beat the Rams the next week. I think you got to aim for that division rival. I think it is their, you know, the rival at the top of the division for them almost always is. I would try not to play some guys back-to-back weeks on the turf. I really would. Whether it's Hufanga, whether it's McCaffrey, Jennings, maybe, like there's some guys are a little nicked up. I don't know if I want to aim towards playing them those two games. If you're going to skip one of them, you skip the Vikings game. You try to beat them with some of your guys out, and then you go get the Rams, and you really roll the dice on that one. That's what I would do. They can't say it like that, and they won't say it like that, but I can, you know, Richard Sherman, they held him out of some of those turf games. I think some foresight, maybe you hold some guys out of the Vikings game.
You're going to hold Juwan Jennings, their top wide receiver, out of the Vikings game?
That's too valuable, Jim Calcami. He's so valuable.
But I agree with you with Hufanga and McCaffrey. I mean, why force the issue when you can get away with not having to do that? I think Hufanga probably is back week three. And McCaffrey, my guess, just a guess, is that he's back week four, which is back in, you know, nice pillow soft Levi's Stadium afternoon game. You give him plenty of time to put that Achilles tendonitis issue behind him.
Yeah, home, road, home. Would be the five games after they come back from L.A. One of them's a short week on our official turf in Seattle. So, that, you know, that's not an easy game, but that's pretty nice to get your guys back in, you know. And they got some veteran guys that could use a bunch of wet grass games after back-to-back artificial turf. Let's talk about Jake Moody. I've taken some dings at him. I haven't said he's a bad kicker. I've just said there's some questions about him. And he just roped in six field goals, never a doubt on any of them.
Well, one of them hit the upright.
Well, I'm sorry. That's right. That was a longer one. That was the 54 or whatever, I should say. But that one, I almost like, if you make it, you don't make it. You don't really get discounted for that one. But that banks off the right side and in. The guys, like Kyle Shanahan, is thinking of him like a guy he can count on, and you can tell. And those 250-yarder plus in the Super Bowl really might have changed the dynamic there. I bring up the blocked extra point, but, you know, maybe there were circumstances on that one. I just think he might not be the greatest kicker in football. They don't need that. They need someone, though, that they can go, okay, we're stuck at the 37, and we're not worried about a 55-yard field goal. Uh-oh, we're stuck at the 39, and we have a 57-yard. Okay, we can try it. Like with Robbie Gould, they can count on him anything from 45 in, but they could not really feel great about anything 50 plus, as is the case with a lot of kickers. But Jake Moody's getting to the point where I don't think Shanahan is blinking at a 55 and 54 yarder. This is important to them because they're not going to give up many points. So if they get a field goal, that does mean something for them. It does mean something for the opponent. The six field goals were really important last night, 18 points. I'll give Jake Moody credit. This guy has a leg, and he's been very, very dependable recently, other than the blockchain point. And I think he is somebody Kyle Shanahan wanted when they used that third round pick, and was a little, like even Kyle mentioned, I think today, right? He did not have some great times last year, and this missed the game winner in Cleveland. There were issues, but he has a good character. They feel good about him bouncing back from stuff. I'll always say that. He's available. I guess he wasn't available in the locker room last night after his six field goals, which is hilarious. He's available after he misses a game, game losing kick in Cleveland, but he's not available after he makes six. But guy's good. I'm just going to say it. He's a good kicker.
Yeah. The locker room is interesting. My issue is that it takes Shanahan a long time to start his presser, and that's when they open the locker room. And then by the time the press conference is over, and they're what, usually 10, 12 minutes, maybe not even that.
Eight to 12.
Yeah, but by the time that's over and you as a reporter get into the locker room, there's like seven guys still left there. And some guys like Jake Moody are quick to exit. Would be nice to talk to him. I think you're absolutely right that the leg is a big part of it, but really it was his makeup. The fact that he doesn't get rattled, the fact that he kind of grew up kicking on really, really bad surfaces in the state of Michigan, in the fall and the winter. And, just never kind of, was affected by it. I remember talking to Harbaugh about him, and Harbaugh was saying, you know, kickers are notorious for coming up with excuses and for allowing a little groin tweak to affect them. Moody never did that, never complained. Certainly dealt with the same issues that any kicker. It's usually groin related, leg related strains, but he never let it affect him. And there's just a kind of an inner toughness there that I think told the 49ers that, okay, if we take a shot on him in the third round, you know, this is going to be a guy that we can rely on for the next 10 years. And I think you're right that at a time when, you know, you're not sure what you're going to get from Ayuk, you're not sure what you're going to get from Christian McCaffrey, Juwan Jennings has an ankle sprain, there might be more 5 or 6 field goal games at the start of the season. So a strong start for the field goal kicker.
I want to bring up a little bit the Ayuk report from Jay Glazer, which the 49ers are confirming, essentially. They're confirming that they were ready to trade him, and the way Jay says it, like, had almost traded him to Pittsburgh right before he agreed to the offer that was on the table already. The 49ers are being very insistent about that. Fine. I believe it's likely very true, as I asked Shanahan about after the game, and he said, yeah, mostly true, that essentially – Ayuk had to go in his office, say, I'll take the deal. And I don't know, Shanahan had to run up the stairs and try to prevent him. That's why I was trying to, like, really ask specifically about that. And I got to, like, pointing at him. And he pointed out that was a little rude of me. I wanted just, like, was Kyle Shanahan going to trade him? Like, he does run the football operations. So the negotiators can bluff, you know, and I'm sure some of that went on. And I'm sure bluffing went on the Ayuk side. But they really were going to trade him without him having a contract deal done with the Steelers? You're just going to do it out of, what, anger? I get some things can be said, but was Kyle Shanahan was going to do that? Now, I didn't really – it's hard to do that in a press conference, so I will admit, okay, I probably shouldn't have done it that way. But I think his answer gave us the answer. He was on board with whatever they were going to do. Like, he whether it was a bluff or not, he wasn't separating himself. That's why – is he going to separate himself from this negotiation? And he never did. So they had to play some hardball, whatever, however it was enunciated. They had to tell Brandon Ayuk they were going to trade him to the Steelers for this deal to get done. Tells you how close to the edge this really was. Even if they maybe weren't really going to trade him at that moment, they were sure ready in their minds to be done with Brandon Ayuk. And I don't know what was so dramatic that Kyle Shanahan had to run up the stairs, but something had to happen to break this, and pretty dramatic for one of their, you know, probably their best receiver, pure receiver, along with Debo, as it does all these other things, and a guy that we never thought wanted to be anywhere else, not really, other than this weird contractual thing. How did you read all that, Barrows?
Yeah, I mean, I thought all along that all the trade stuff, as we've discussed, was exactly that, trying to sort of force Ayuk into the decision, which is what they thought he would ultimately decide, which is, I want to be here. And I thought all the stuff in early August was about that. And this would kind of fall into that category too, I would think. The question is how close it did come. The bottom line is that Shanahan definitely tried to talk him out of it and definitely succeeded in doing that. So, I get the sense that the 49ers thought that this was going to happen all along. They just thought it was going to happen a lot earlier than it did. We saw exactly what we were expecting. I mean, I don't want to say that I predicted, what was it, 2 catches and 28 yards. I forget what the total was. But that's exactly what we were thinking the first game of the season for Brandon Ayuk would look like. With him missing so much time, it was basically him running down the field and then very slowly jogging off and Chris Conley coming in to replace him. I wonder, 60% of the snaps in week one, probably be like 70% in Minnesota and then 80% the next week. And then for the New England game, probably up around his usual 90 to 95% of the snaps. And that's when I think we can expect to see the real Brandon Ayuk show up.
Yeah, he had that one in the end zone, which he could have caught. Not the easy one, but he's caught those. I mean, he's caught.
Yeah, the Philadelphia game was exactly like that.
Absolutely. Like, he's caught those. He dropped one, but then right before he catches a third and six, whatever, 14 yards. Like, you knew he was going to catch that one after dropping the one right before it. Clearly timing, the timing is not going to be there. The balls you have to adjust to on the fly with a defender coming to you. These are not easy plays. This is why he's getting paid $30 million, but I'm sure that they will be coming. And I was watching, like, he was not dogging it ever. Like, he was running hard. when the ball was not coming to him, he was still running down, hand, you know, play action, whatever. He was running his routes hard as he always does. I don't think they have to worry about that. They just got to wait, you know, find out when the timing is going to be right. And I just can't imagine it's going to be too long a thing. That third down, to me, it was like he had to make that third down catch. If he does not make that third down catch, you got to worry. He makes that third down catch, gets the 14 yards, the chains move, they score. This is who they are. And then he'll have some game where he's going to go for 7 and 120 and 2 touchdowns. So that's just the Brandon Ayuk. I think they know they're getting. That's why they paid him. There could be murmuring if it doesn't happen right away. Of course there will be. This happened so long. I don't think the 49ers brass, as we can tell by these stories out, are happy with him. They were not happy with him at all the last month or so. But he's on the team. They're going to play. And I'm not pointing at Kyle Shanahan anymore in a presser. What am I doing here? I didn't realize what was happening there. Right? It's like, just kind of want to say, okay, there's Jed York and Parag Marathe over there, and you and John, what were you and that's what I want. Like, what were you and John thinking through this? It's just hard to really make them do that in a presser. And he didn't, and he's never one time dinged the negotiator. So I get it, and I'm going to keep, I'll stay on that one. Anything else, Barrows, want to bring up?
I was a little surprised Cowan didn't get any snaps in the game, because the whole game plan was to, you know, stretch the Jets horizontally as much as they could, and then kind of ram Jordan Mason up the middle. And Cowan's really good at the horizontal stuff. So a bit of a surprise, but also in keeping with the 49ers' reluctance to play rookies who aren't named Dominic Pooney. And Pooney had a great game. It was part of that just avalanche of running plays. So basically everything that we expected from him. I'm trying to think if any other rookies stood out. Renardo Green had a nice tackle on special teams, but didn't really come in on defense at all. Pretty standard stuff for a Shanahan coach team.
Garendo got one snap at running back, right? I think I saw him in there for one snap, and then the ball got nowhere near him. So, oh, well, for that fast start for Isaac, and did not return kickoffs, because it was Deebo Samuel and Kyle Juszczyk returning kickoffs, which was, I guess they knew that, you know, the guy, you know, Zuerlein was going to kick it to the end zone every time. I don't think they had too much worry about wear and tear on Deebo for that one. I guess he returned one. I can't even remember now. It was towards the end.
One of them went out the side of the end zone and went to the 20, which probably is like the ultimate play for the kickoff team.
Yep. Then Zuerlein's one guy who can do it. Okay. We went through a pretty clinically there. Interesting ball game. 49ers are 1-0. They got the Vikings and old friend Sam Darnold. You know, mention that old buddy Sam Darnold, who looked pretty good in week one. We'll see what they can do to him. But I think if they're the 49ers that we think they are, they should play this one pretty close to the vest. Get through that defense. I don't think it's a great Vikings defense. Play Darnold very, you know, wrap him up, make sure that he's not getting loose for the, you know, the kind of scramble plays we know he's pretty good at. Make sure Justin Jefferson doesn't beat you. Put Javarius Ward on him as much as possible. And I just think they win it 24-10 or something. That would be your classic 49ers squeeze job, kind of like last night was. And against Shanahan has not lost many games to bad teams, but I just like, you just, he doesn't do, it's like Harbaugh does not lose to bad teams. Gonna here or there, you're always going to lose some, but usually there's a reason why they lost. It isn't inexplicable. And, even if they sit McCaffrey again and a few others, I would be surprised that they turn, you know, lay an egg in Minnesota on Sunday. Well, I'll just say that. Maybe I'm jinxing them, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, no Jordan Addison, who was the Vikings hero for the Week 7 game last year. So that's in the 49ers' favor as well.
All right, Barros, we'll catch you. If there's another emergency, we'll do it later this week. But I don't know if they got any emergencies left. We've gone through all the emergency shows.
I hope not.
Emergencies itself. And we'll probably catch you guys at the over the weekend or Monday of next week, reviewing the Vikings game. All right, see you, everybody.